We'll just briefly start a review. We're going to be on Tesamon Aleph, but let's do a quick review of where we were yesterday. So we went through the Mishnah on Tesamon Aleph. We were saying we were Daf Yomi people yesterday. Very exciting. We had the Chatas Ha'Of and the various stages related to the Chatas Ha'Of, including a very lengthy discussion about what is the status of if a Tful Yom or Mechusar Kippurim touches it after it was nimlaka, after we had malika take place, which was akin to shchita of an animal, and the various discussions, what is psul exactly, and does it become which type of tamei thing according to which opinion. Ultimately, we were able to reconcile all the opinions with our Mishnah and said that the additional stringencies were only midrabanan. Nevertheless, we then had a short discussion about Rabbi Akiva's opinion that Zrika Moel Sliyotze, which is why the implication is that there's an Isser here to eat it. And then finally, we had this whole discussion within the opinion of Rav, whether it's the Hazza'ah or whether it's the Mitsui. Is it the juicing or is it the sprinkling? And basically, the bottom line was the juicing even necessary? We had an opinion that it wasn't. We had a kasha from the Korban Mincha, where it seemed to be yes required and used similar language. And then ultimately we defended that. We did note that by an Olas Ha'Of, which we're going to learn about today in the Mishnah, there is no sprinkling. There is only Mitzat Hadam, whereas by a Chatat, there may be both required. At the very least, there's sprinkling. And we were still dealing with some of the opinions down here. Let's pick up, even though I know we're up to Gufa Tana Dvar Bishmol, let's just read the Tana Dvar Bishmol so we know what's going on over here. Okay. So, Tana Dvar Bishmol answered, just to give us some context on Ches Amud Beis, Tana Dvar Bishmol answered that the word Vehanish Arbadam is that if there is blood left over, you would juice it, but would there not be blood left over, you wouldn't have to juice it. So says the Gemara, Gufa. We are now about 8-9 lines down on Tes Amud Aleph. Gufa, Tana Dvar Bishmol, Sheim Nishar Badam. In regards to that, you know, making that our new discussion point, Tana Dvar Bishmol said, Sheim Nishar Badam, asks the Gemara, how could it be that Tana Dvar Bishmol, which means that it was taught in the house or the yeshiva of Rabbi Yishmael, that they said, Sheim Nishar Badam, that Mitzat Adam is not a requirement. How could that be? Impossible. But the same, it was also taught, we have a recording that it was also taught in Rabbi Yishmael's house. That they were of the opinion that Shiraim, what is left over, is Me'akev. Meaning it's, Rashi gives you the whole background over here, there's a machlokas between Rabbi Yishmael and Rabbi Akiva. But ultimately, okay, Rabbi Yishmael said me'akvin, okay, which is a language that means it holds back, it stops the korban from being kosher, exactly. And Rabbi Akiva disagrees. The point is, though, Rabbi Yishmael says it is me'akev. If it is me'akev, then we've got a problem, because that's the opposite of what she'im nishar badam. Im nishar badam means optional. Me'akev means mandatory. Which one is it, mandatory or optional? Do you have to do the mitzat adam or not? V'amar of Papa, and Rav Papa explained that machlokes there, what is me'akvin referring to? Mitzui chatat ha'ofika minayu. That Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Yishmael are arguing exactly on this point. And Rabbi Yishmael's opinion there is that mitzui chatat ha'of is required. Answers the Gemara, a classic answer, trei tanai v'aliba de Rabbi Yishmael. It's two different opinions about what Rabbi Yishmael himself held. One opinion says he held that it is required, the other opinion says he held it was not required, but ultimately we don't have a fancy logical distinction to make between this and this. And we say, no, just two different opinions about what Rabbi Yishmael said, but ultimately you have both opinions recorded in his name. Good? Fine? Okay. Says the Mishnah, a massive, massive Mishnah. We'll see if we get through it today. What time is Shachar?
Seven.
Seven. Okay, so with
Slichot. Half hour.
The
Slichot was up yesterday. The Slichot aren't here now. So Raph will have to bring it up. Yeah.
I looked around. I don't know where they are.
No, I looked. I was going to go downstairs, but it's not my job, you know.
Anyway, I just figured I'd let Louis know. Maybe he'll come here a little early.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, I was curious if they still did the Monday, Thursday thing during Slichos, but they do not. Okay.
No, they don't.
They speak until 7 o'clock.
All right. Got it. Okay. So, fine. Ola Ta'of. Let's go through the Mishnah. So the Mishnah now, similar to the previous Mishnah, Chatas Ta'of, is going to go through an abundance of cases in which it's going to talk about the different stages of Me'ila. Okay, so that's ultimately where we are. Says the Mishnah, Ola Ta'of. Moalin ba misha huktisha. Okay, so as soon as you have hektish, as soon as you have sanctifying of the designation of the animal, then me'ila begins for the ola tov. Nimlika, once you have melika, which again is akin to slaughtering the animal, hukshara lipasel bitful yom uv mechusar kipurim uvelina. Just like we had in the last Mishnah, you have the same status as soon as the melika was performed. Now again, it can become pasel if taken by a tful yom, mechusar kipurim, or by leaving it over. Again, we didn't know exactly what lina was. Could have been one of two options, but okay. Mitza dama, which is different than our text in the last Mishnah. What was the text? Was huza dama. Yeah. Now we have mitza dama. What's the reason for the distinction? Because as we said, there is no haza'a, there is no sprinkling by an ola ta'of. It's only mitza, it's only the juicing. So if it, once it was juiced, chayavin alav mishum pigul notar vitame. You are liable for Pigul Nosar and Tame, which again we've encountered many times in Mu'alin Ba, and there is Me'ila ad Shetetze Leveta Deshen. So when then does Me'ila go away? Meaning, what is the end point for Me'ila when it comes to an animal that never has Shateter La Kohanim, right? An Ola, so just to remind ourselves, an Ola is something that may never be consumed by the Kohanim. An Ola is fully burnt, right? Could be the Kohanim of the ability to have, I think, maybe the skins of the Ola, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
But there's never a heter lekohanim of the meat.
Nobody can eat it.
So, exactly, no one can eat it. It's all legavoa. It all goes to God. So, does this mean that there's me'ila forever? So, says the Mishnah, the end point for me'ila is ad shetetze leveit hadeshen, until it goes out to the beit hadeshen. Beit hadeshen, so, correct. Basically, once it's burnt, and perhaps then some, there is me'ila. But once the ashes are removed in some form or fashion, there was this practice called Shemat Hadeshen of removing of the ashes. Once those ashes are removed, then already there's no me'ila on the ash.
To be halacha too. That's the point. You have to take the addition of the proper protocol as well.
Presumably, in terms of removing it from me'ila. If it was never, if it remained. And we'll see in the Gemara exactly what this means, because there were many different ways in which the deshen was removed. There was from here to here and here to here. And so let's
coin to coin.
Yeah, so we'll see exactly how much this goes, but ultimately, even past the time that it's being burnt, even its ashes still have me'ila until a certain point. Okay, so noting that again, this is how far it goes. Okay, let's continue. Parimani strafim was irmani strafim, which sounds again like we're saying korbanos in the morning over here, for those of you who say izehu mikoman. But the parimani strafim was irmani strafim are actually various special cases of Parim and Seirim. In particular, the highlight of this is, anybody remember offhand?
Sorry, I missed the question.
What is the highlight of the Parim HaNisrafim and Seirim HaNisrafim, the classic case coming up? Yom Kippur. On Yom Kippur, we have Parim HaNisrafim and Seirim HaNisrafim. Okay, there are other specific cases as well, which if you learn the Mepharshim back over there, and again, Ezo Mekoman, go into in great detail. But Parim HaNisrafim is Parim HaNisrafim, ones that are supposed to be entirely burnt. So Mo'alin Bahen Mishu Huktishu. Again, once they were sanctified, once they were set aside, there's Me'ila. Nishkatu, if they were slaughtered, Hukshiru Lipasel Bitful Yom Uvmuchusar Kipurim Uvalina. Same as well. As soon as you did slaughtering, which as we said is the same stage as Malika, so we're being consistent here. Okay, they are now able to become Pasel by Tful Yom, Muchus Kipurim, and Lina. Huza daman, here again, they're back to sprinkling again, because it's a full-fledged korban. At that point, chayavin alihem yishum pigul notar v'tamei, umo'alin bahen beveit hadeshen ad sheyatich habasar. And there's me'ila once the, literally means once the meat melts. Obviously, meat doesn't melt, but it means once it's really, really burnt. Okay, once it's really, really burnt. Okay. Sorry, I just lost the place over here. Okay, ha'ola. Regular ola now. Mo'alin ba'mishu huktisha. Again, from when to sanctify, there is me'ila. nishchata, if it was slaughtered, hukshali pasa b'tfil yom of mechuzer kippur mufalina. Again, same status after shchita.
This is when they hukdash it by mouth. By mouth. He sets aside the animal.
Okay.
Then, because then it's nishchata. After that...
Did I say something?
No, you didn't. I'm just explaining there's a difference. Because the other one was... The first one became Kodesh different. It became Kodesh.
Did it? I think they were all Mishuk.
Yeah. So when it says Zot Hare Zot Chatat, that's the point.
As opposed to
the Hazaah.
No, all of them became Kodesh Mishuk Tisha.
When he sets it aside.
Yeah. Okay. I'm not. Okay. I thought I.
No,
okay.
No. You didn't say anything wrong. I just wanted to pinpoint the moment. That's
all.
So we're smack in the middle of the Mishnah, this giant Mishnah that's on Ted Amud Aleph. We're up to the case of the Ola. The Ola, like the previous... So I would say we're now 6 lines down into the Mishnah. So start from the Mishnah on Ted Amud Aleph on 9a and count down 6 lines. Okay, so the third word on the line, Ha'ola. You got it? I think you're muted.
Okay, got it. I'm good, thank you.
Okay. So anyways, just like the Ola Ta'of, Mishu Huktisha, just like the next case, Paraman Israfim, Mishu Huktishu, so too, Ha'ola, Ma'olin Ba Mishu Huktisha, again, from the time that it sanctified Bepeh, as you mentioned, Nishkata, if it was slaughtered, once it was slaughtered, Hoch Sharli Pasa, Betzvul Yom, Chosur Kibur, Mvalina, Mishu Nizrak Dama, Chayav En Alea, Mishu Pigol No Sifatama, Vein Ma'olin Be'oros. Mm-hmm. So over here, as we mentioned before, an ola, the skins, okay, the hide is what goes to the kohanim. So that may have a heter. So says the Mishnah, what's the halacha? Once you have Misha Nizrak Dama, once you have the sprinkling of the blood is splattered, you have Pigol Noser and Tameh, and at that point, Ve'ein Moalin Ba'oros. Were one to have benefit from the skin, that's no longer Me'ila. Aval moalin bibasar, and here we're splitting up the different parts of the animal depending on what's permitted. So when regards to the orot, were someone to take the hide and, again, use them inappropriately, they would not be chayav for me'ila on that. But however, if they took the meat of the animal and did, then, of course, there would be an issue. Aval moalin bibasar ad shetetze levet hadeshen. Again, an ambiguous phrase, until it goes out to the beit hadeshen, exactly what state. Just as, again, the Gemara will discuss. Okay.
What are the kohanim doing with the hides?
Making shoes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Footballs.
Exactly, footballs.
putting down as a tarp on the floor so they don't get wet.
Yeah, like whatever it is, it's theirs. It's theirs to use. Okay. You know the famous story they tell about the Netziv.
Yeah.
Are people familiar with the story?
No.
So the story goes... I never looked up where people say it's quoted or it's said over or whatever. But anyways, this is a story that's very, very commonly told about the Netziv. That apparently when he was a young child, he wasn't so interested in his studies. And you have to remember, when you're growing up in Europe, it wasn't that everyone gets to go to yeshiva for as long as they want and their parents pay for their tuition for many, many years. It's you're needed. And if you maybe you're in cheder for a few years and then you went and got an occupation. And that was the end of that. So one night, apparently, he overheard his parents saying, "You know what? He's not being successful in cheder. That's it. We're gonna send him tomorrow to the shoemaker. And he heard this. He was very shocked. It kind of shocked him into reality. He said, And apparently, he ran down. He appealed his case. Says, "No, I'm going to take it seriously. And he became the great netziv. And he wrote many, many svarim. And so apparently, he said at the siyum of I think it was him, Akshela, when he finished writing that book, he said that would it have been that I wouldn't have intervened, would it have been that I didn't take it seriously, when I would have gone up to Shemayim, they would have said, "Oh, here's a nice shoemaker, he was honest, he was a good guy, where's the Hamek Sheila? Where's this book?" They would have asked him for it. And he said, "You know, basically, Baruch Hashem, that I was able to do this, and look what I was able to produce. What would have been missing had I not taken this opportunity, as well as this other svarim." My Rebbe, Reb Shurkin, who has a fantastic sense of humor, used to say, and there's some Rosh Hashivas now, that they're going to come up to Shemaim, and Hashem's going to say, where are all those pairs of shoes you could have made?
Yeah, I know.
Okay. Okay, continuing with our, Chatzat v'asham v'ziv cheshal
mitzibur. That was close. He almost had to get a professional.
Sorry?
That was a close call. He almost had to get a professional.
Yeah.
Chas v'shal.
I think, again, realizing the context that he was in is important here, where you had almost nobody with the opportunity to learn and the opportunity to write Svarim. Okay. I think we would say the same thing about someone like Albert Einstein, that we would consider it a failure if Albert Einstein was a shoemaker and worked in a trade like that. So again, it's, there's lots of discussion around these points nowadays, especially about the elite and people that, again, we would we would say the same thing about, for example, if someone was found a cure for cancer or some other major illness, of course we would say we don't want them to be a plumber. A plumber is a great trade, and I'd say many Rosh Yeshivas maybe would be better off if they were shoemakers. But that doesn't mean we shouldn't look at someone who was great and accomplished so much and say we are very happy that they accomplished that. I don't think it's about Chas v'Shalom getting a profession.
Well, I would only add, I don't want to prolong this, but there is value in having a common touch and having experience in trades. Even for Talmidei Chachamim.
For sure, and we see in the Gemara they did.
Rumbo was
on
a
the
doctor.
Side.
Rumbo was a doctor. Rashi was something else.
They did.
Yeah.
They had to make a living.
Yeah. No, there's no there's no question that there's value in that from a Torah perspective. I'm just saying we shouldn't look at it as, thank God he didn't have to get a job. That's not the, believe that's the correct
Albert
attitude.
Albert Einstein had to work. He worked in a patent office for many years.
Right. Listen, I remember when I'll just say one more comment, then we'll go back to the Mishnah. But I remember when I was in Nair for high school. Nair, obviously, more on the extreme right in terms of learning versus working. But I remember our principal, who just actually moved, Rabbi Englander, who I have such tremendous respect for. It's impressive. Really, really amazing person on a number of levels. Always kept up with me afterwards and even though he was the disciplinarian in school. But what was really impressive is he came in and somebody made a comment to him like, you just want us to learn Torah and never get jobs. So there was my Rebbe, Rabbi Fireshevitz, in grade 11, when he was, I guess, subbing for him or whatever reason he was in our classroom, had like 35 Gedolim pictures up on the back wall. And he said, as far as I'm aware, every single person there had a job. Every single person there. Now, teaching is a job. Being a rabbi of a community is also a job. I'm not telling you not to get a job. This person was in business. This person was this. Then all this list of great rabbis, even though they were European rabbis, again, not even from the times of Chazal. He says every single one of them had a job. Every single one of them did something. Now, they were also big Talmidei Chachamim. So that's really important. But no one's saying don't get a job.
Well, even way back when there was a Sandlar, remember the shoemaker, one of the rabbis?
Yep, Yochanan Sandlar. Yep.
Right.
Anyways, Ben Molim Doros, Avolim Basar, Achutetsu, Vesadesh, Chatas, Vashram, Viziv, Cheshal, Mitzibur. So these korbanos, which are partially eaten, okay, Chatas, Vashram, Viziv, Cheshal, Mitzibur, Molin Bahen, Mishu, Tishu. So again, from the time they are sanctified, Me'ila. Nishchatu, if they were slaughtered, Hukshruli, Pasabas, Vilyom, Vachus, Rikipur, Muvalina. From that time they're slaughtered, again, they have these three different psulin, Nizrak, Daman, and once the blood is sprinkled, Chayavan, Alain, Mishum, Pigalnos, Vitame. In Moalin Bebasar, there is no Me'ila at that point, from the sprinkling. There is no Me'ila on the meat, because again, the meat there is Hetzlakonim. Ava Moalin Be'imurehen, but again, the parts that have to be burnt, like we saw earlier, those things, there are Me'ila on Acheyetzu Le'Beit HaDeshen until they go out to the Beit HaDeshen. Shtei Halachem. Okay, so now we get to the more obscure.
That aren't eaten.
Correct. The parts that have to be burnt. Correct. The parts that have to be burnt remain in the status of Mila until they are finished. Meaning, each part of the korban, whenever its rituals are finished, that's when it leaves Mila. That's the bottom line. Mm-hmm. Okay? Now we're going to move on to things that are a little bit less well-known. Shtei Halechem. Okay? So the Shtei Halechem were brought on which holiday?
Shavuot.
Very good. Okay? Shavuot, along with the Kivsei Atzeret, with some korbanot were alongside it. Again, it was two loaves. Okay, that's Shtei Halechem, that's the translation, two loaves. So Shtei Halechem, all in behind Mishu Huktushu. Again, once they were set aside, presumably what this means is obviously not the bread, but the flour and the ingredients. Okay? Whatever stage the ingredients were sanctified at. Presumably, I would assume it was just plain raw flour and water and whatever else and had to be in there. But, okay. Karmu batanor, once they are in the oven and again a skin appears over them, which we had before by the Lachmei Toda, huchshuli pasabit fulyom v'mechus yirkipurim, possibly uvalina, depends on who you ask over here. At that point, if it's fulyom v'mechus yirkipurim handles them, they're going to be pasal. V'lishkot alehen es hazevach. Okay? And at that point, okay, you can slaughter the other korbanot, the kivsei atzeret, that accompany the shtei halechem, you can slaughter them. Right?
Upon them.
Right? Tichtiv v'yikraftem al halechem v'amrinan al b'samuch. V'kevan t'karmu mikri lechem. So as soon as you had the skin on the bread, again, this outer crust of some sort, again, exactly how hard it has to be, I'm sure there are discussions of this, but ultimately, at that point, you can slaughter the korbanot that accompany it. Now, these korbanot, once they are performed, so here we go, nizrak daman shel kvasim, once those were slaughtered and you sprinkled their blood, obviously you can't sprinkle the blood of the bread, but you sprinkle the blood of the korbanot that accompany the bread, chayavin alehen mishum pikul no tepetame, ve'in bahem me'ila. Okay, at that point, there is no longer me'ila, because again, you have a heter lakohanim. Lechem apanim. Okay, this is a different type of bread. This was the weekly bread that was placed on the shulchan. Okay, again, stayed there week by week.
It never spoiled, did
it? Well, it never spoiled while it was on
the
shulchan, yes. I would imagine once you took it off, if it was not eaten, we'll see, actually. Okay, lechem apanim. Moalin bo misha huktisha. Again, one from when it was sanctified, you had me'ila. Karam batanor hukshali pasabit ful yom v'chus rikipurim. Ulihi sader al gabe ha-shulchan. Once again, it had a crust. It was permitted at that point to put it on the shulchan. Karvu ha-bazichin. So basically after the lechem apanim, which was like a type of sponge cake almost, was put on the shulchan, was organized on the shulchan. There was also this process of putting on the bazich, shnei bazich elevona. There were these two basically scoopers that had various forms of essentially spices. Okay, and those
spicy, yeah.
Okay, and those were the spices that were brought along with it. So once that happens, karvu habazichin chayavin alav mishum pikul nosir v'tamei ve'in bo me'ila. Again, at that point, the process is complete. So you have pikul nosir v'tamei in all of these cases. By the way, even these things that are not strictly speaking what we think of as korbanot, they have the same status for pikul nosir and tamei. There are certain time frames which they must be eaten in. And if you thought, again, eating them in certain places which they must be eaten in, and you thought of the wrong thing during different parts of the process, you can actually make them pigul noser and tame, even though it's not like you're slaughtering it over here. Right? Again, obviously you're not slaughtering the bread. It's, there's another line Rish Hurkin has, is in a sefer called Meged Givos Olam, where he's of the opinion, he's actually very lenient in certain psakim, but one of the jokes that he has there, Rabbi Vadia brings it in a response of his. So saying this is aser because of, so many people will like to make these wide-ranging comparisons. For example, they'll say it's aser to shave with a shaver because it's like a razor. For example, okay, it's an electric shaver. Generally speaking, we are very, very lenient with, and this was one of his big important points. Of course, it's mutter to shave with a shaver. You don't have to worry, even this type of shaver and that type of shaver. He says none of them are razors. So he says, saying that shaving with a shaver is like shaving with a razor is like saying that you can't cut your challah on Shabbos because it's kosher. It's like saying you can't cut your challah because it's kosher. Right? That's these type of jokes. But bottom line is, for these type of korbanot, even though there's no shkita and zrika and it's not animals, and it's just shtei halechem, you have the same status over here. Let's continue. Hamenachos. Final case of the Mishnah that we have over here. So Korban Mincha. Korban Mincha is a meal offering. Okay, again, you've got flour, you've got oil, and you've got spices. These are all around.
No blood.
No blood again. Okay. Molin Bahan Mishu Uktishu again, once they were sanctified. Here for sure they were sanctified and brought as just plain ingredients. Okay. Kichu Bakli. once they were placed in one of the clay sharet, one of the vessels, in the Beit HaMikdash, at that stage, Karav HaKometz, right? And then, as we've seen a few times, so basically what they would do is they would take the Kometz, which was more or less a handful, partial handful, from the flour, and that would be burnt, whereas the rest of it could be consumed by the Kohanim. Okay, and that's what we're talking about really at the top of the page, Misaltau Mishamna, the question from there. So Karav HaKometz, once they brought that, they offered the Kometz, so then Chayavin Alav Mishum Pigul Notar V'Tameh, you are liable for it, okay, for Pigul Notar and Tameh, meaning for the whole Korban Mincha, V'ein Moalin B'Shirayim. However, at that point, everything other than the Kometz loses the status of Me'ila. Why? Because the Kohanim can eat it, right? Again, only the Kometz remains in Me'ila. Okay, and finally, Avamol in Bekometz at Sheyetzi Leveit HaDeshen. But the Kometz itself remains until it goes out to the Beit HaDeshen. Okay, again, and at Sheyetzi Leveit HaDeshen, what stage is that? Let's see in the Gemara. Itmar. The following discussion is recorded. Hanehane me'ifer tapuach she'al gavei hamizbeach. Let's say someone had Hana, and I see we'll let the various people of Shul resolve the missing slichos situation. So basically, you had a pile of deshen, you had a pile of ashes that was on top of the mizbeach. So let's say someone goes over there, and I don't know what they need ashes for. Maybe they're making a wedding, they want to put ashes on the groom's head, even though you wouldn't have them in the times of the Beit HaMikdash. I'm saying it a little bit as a joke. Whatever you needed ashes for, let's say you went and you took those ashes, and you benefited from them. What's the halacha? Rav amar ein mo'alin bo. Rav says there's no mi'ila there. No, it's burnt to a crisp. It's ash. Don't worry about it. Rav Yochanan amar mo'alin bo. And Rav Yochanan says there is mi'ila. Says the Gemara lifnei trumas hadeshen, before the action of trumas hadeshen was performed. Okay? Meaning there's that the deshen was sort of cleared off from the mizbeach. Okay? That's what's known as Truma Sadeshin. It was placed next to the Mizbeach. That was sort of stage one of Truma Sadeshin. So says Zigmar, before that happened, there is Mi'ila still at that stage. Meaning, if nothing, no performance of any ritual regarding the ashes was done yet that day, okay, about this ash, then for sure everyone agrees there is Mi'ila. Ki pligi. When do Rav and Rabbi Yochanan argue la'achar trumat hadeshen? After the deshen was cleared off. Rav amar ein mo'alin. Rav says no mo'alin, ein mo'alin bo, that there's no mi'ila, hari na'aseh mitzvaso. Because the mitzvah was already done. Meaning the mitzvah of trumat hadeshen was performed, and that's the final ritual that relates to this korban. Even, I guess, if there was a little bit of ash left over, nu. Okay, the mitzvah was done to it. You good?
Mm-hmm.
Rabbi Yochanan Amar, Rabbi Yochanan said, no. Kevan dichsiv vilavash hakohen midovad. Okay, vigomer. Kevan tzarech levig de kihuna biktusha seikai. Says, when the Kohen does this, we see that it's still considered to be part of the mitzvah.
Wearing this outfit, what he has,
yes,
a special outfit with a
chosha. Correct. Yeah. Okay, so meaning since it has to be done with wearing the appropriate clothing, so therefore, that still is considered to be Kodesh at that point, and therefore, even though it was done, until it's gone, way out, there's still going to be Me'ila over here. Kevin Tarchavik, Dikuna Viktu Shasekai. Tnan, we learned in the Mishnah, Mo'alin Bayana Chetetzi Levet HaDeshen, Kashil Rav. Says the Gemara, whoa, we got a very obvious question. What is the language of the Mishnah used over and over and over again? Ad Shetetzi Levet HaDeshen. What is the Beit HaDeshen? Presumably. So, Achetetzi Levet HaDeshen means once you take all of the ash from the Beit HaMikdash till some place way, way, way far out. Right? Meaning, so basically there were two stages to this. Okay? And you can, we can really see this over here. Let's take a look.
Is lifting it up, the other,
yeah.
Staking it out.
Correct. There was one that was, there was Ve'rimet HaDeshen HaKaloeshen next to.
Are we going to be davening here or downstairs? Because I don't see the slichos.
It's right here.
Where?
Right here. We're davening here.
Okay, but where are the slichos books?
Yeah, well, he's going to get them.
Oh, okay. Sorry to interrupt.
No worries.
Who is that?
Anyways, says the, right, so if you look, basically, again, there were these two major stages, okay? Mm-hmm. One was, you can see over here, take a look. Yeah. So basically the... So here was this the stages of Trumat Hadeshen, okay? If you look in Rashi over here, this big, big Rashi, Anename Efer Tapuach, what's Efer Tapuach? Okay, what was this, apples? You took apples and burnt them? I know, because the pile looked like an apple. Basically what he says, if you look in Rashi, Rashi explains like this. Let's read this Rashi and we'll call it here. But Rashi gives you the whole story over here, okay? This would be after you lifted it up. This is what we learned in Maseches Tamid, or what you learned in Maseches Tamid. So the Kohen would go up to the top of the Mizbeach, and he would move away the coals to here and there. He would move them around. At Hameukalot, and he would basically clear out those ones that were fully burnt out, apnimiot, viyarad, and he would go down. Vehainu trumat hadeshen, that's considered trumat hadeshen. He gel ritzpa, when he got to the floor, tzavar et agechalem, al gabi haritzpa, he piled them up on the floor. Rachok min hakevesh gimel tfachim, once he got down, okay, he would pile up these coals, again, and the ash as well. Three tfachim away from the... from the ramp, Hayno Makom Shenosin Sham Shumas Tadeshin, which was the place. Vanisher Agam Mizbeach Hayat Sover Es Haifer Lesar Echad Sham Mizbeach Biyachad Veosehu Agul Kumin Tapuach. And of the remaining ashes on the Mizbeach, he would gather them to one side and make them, and he says, a round shape like a tapuach. Vigavoa Kumin Kovan. It was high like a hat. Okay, Vamrin Hasan Pamim Shiyeshalav Shalosh Meos Kur, Vyacharka Chaya Poshit is Begadav, Lovish Begadim, Hapechusin Mehen. After it says, he would take off, like the Torah says, he would take off the Vigdekun, and then he would wear sort of lesser clothing. Begadim Shebishal Behen Kedera, Larabo, Al Yimzog Behen Kos Larabo. Okay, and then what would he do? Vayamotzi Michutz Lamachane Levet Hadeshen. Okay, afterwards he would take all of this stuff and he would bring it way out of the camp. He would put on, you know, his cooking clothes. That's the Gemara makes the connection.
That's how you know it from the Efer Tapuach.
Correct. So Efer Tapuach means you already moved it over to the side. You already did the Haramat Hadeshen. So stage one is complete. But it's not yet Michutz L'machane. It's not yet out. So the question is, what's the halacha? So again, if at that stage you have this machlokes between Rav and Rabbi Yochanan.
And he gives the weight of what the ashes are supposed to be. He says a shalosh meyot kur.
That's no, he says pa'amim sheyishalav. Yeah, it could have been tons, up to that amount.
Yeah. That's the
and kura, is kura weight or is kura volume?
Oh, it's a volume. It's a volume. Volume of weight, though.
I'm not following that part.
Okay. You're saying it's a cubic. You're saying it's a cubic or
yeah, weight. If I'm not mistaken.
I not have a, my slip with me. I keep on forgetting that.
Yeah.
But it's a weight, anyhow. Some type of quantity. Okay.
Right. Or maybe the base core is the volume. Yeah. Could be the base core is the volume. How much it would take to make a core of tefuah, and the core would be the weight, maybe. Yeah, could be.
Yeah.
Anyways, the point is, it's there was a lot there sometimes.
Yeah.
But yeah, it could be that I think base core is the volume and core may be a weight. Okay. Anyways, the bottom line is we have the machlokes between Rav and Rabbi Yochanan. We'll continue on a little bit more. We've got another couple of minutes. Okay. So says again, Rav is of the opinion that Everyone agrees before Trumat Hadeshen, before the Kohen did the initial lifting and the initial moving things to the side, there is a problem. Okay. After that stage, we have this machlokes in Rav and Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan says, no, again, there's special clothing that are still worn for this whole process until it's taken out of the camp. You got to wait. Ask the Gemara, Tnan, but we have a Mishnah, Moalin by an Ajitati Levet Hadeshen, which is outside the camp. Kashel Rav, there's a question of Rav. Amar Lecha Rav, Rav would tell you, Ajitati Levet Hadeshen, until it's fitting to be removed to then. Meaning, before Trumat Hadeshen is done, you can't take it outside. Once Trumat Hadeshen, that ritual has been completed, then you can go and take it to this place, to this place, to this place, to this place. Meaning to Bechutz L'machaneh. So what it means until Achetetei L'Beit Hadeshen is until you may remove it to the Beit Hadeshen, not until it actually reached the Beit Hadeshen outside the camp. Mate, we've got another question. V'kulan shepak'u me'al gabi ha'mizbeach lo yachzir. Okay. V'chin gachelet shepak'u me'al gabi ha'mizbeach lo yachzir. Ha'agave ha'mizbeach yachzir. It says all of them that were removed from the mizbeach should not be returned. Okay, and you've got a whole another story over here. Rashi brings from Masechet Zvachim. Okay, right. The eluim alu yeridu b'sar kachikadashim hatzemer shebarashi akvasim v'seir shebizakan atiyashim v'atzamas v'agim v'karnayim v'atlafayim bezman shemichubarim yalu shenemar v'iktir akmenas kol mizbeacha Pirshu lo yalu v'kulan she'al l'rosh ha'mizbeach, take a look, v'shuv paku me'al gav ha'mizbeach lo yachzir, vein v'hen me'ila. Okay? So too, okay, we're talking about a gacheles of, says Rashi, of the wood that was on the mizbeach, that the rule is that if they were off the mizbeach, they can't be returned, okay? But if they still are on the mizbeach, we see they do have some kedusha. Ha'al gav ha'mizbeach, says the Gemara, yachzir, you can return it. Bishlam al Rabbi Yochanan, this works for Rabbi Yochanan, Nicha, it's all good. Why? Because he says there's still Kedusha on it, even though you've got the Eferatapuach there. You have the ashes that are still on the Mizbeach. We're saying we can put them back on theoretically, right? They still maintain a certain status of Kedusha. However, L'Rav, El L'Rav Kasha, there's going to be a big problem for Rav, because Rav says there's no Kedusha, then Rav says there's no more Me'ila, even once you've moved it to the side of the Mizbeach. So what's going on? Okay, Amar l'charav shani gacheles ishbei mishasha. He says, no, it's very different. There's a difference between ashes and a coal. Exactly, a coal or an ember. Mishasha sometimes means mamish, yeah, like there's something, or it can mean you can't really touch it. Okay. But the point is that if we think of coals, right? Coals are significant. They're big chunks. And again, we're talking about coals of wood. Right, that's what we're talking about here. When you've got a coal, okay, not only is it hot, even if it's extinguished, it's still significant, right? I don't think anybody would eat a coal, alongside their meal on Erev Tisha B'Av. But ashes are nothing. Ashes are air. Ashes are light. They've no significance to them. So therefore, he says the ashes, once they were moved, that's already the end of their story. But of course, if it was a significant chunk, like a coal, like an ember, then of course I would agree. Okay, that's how he distinguishes between the gachelet shepakal me'agam mizbeach and everything else. Okay, so this is ultimately what his point is over here. This is Rav's defense, and we'll continue with Rav's defense more tomorrow when you don't have to start slichos momentarily.
Excellent.
Great. I like slichos days because we can go right up to the bell, and not everyone doesn't need to get ready.
Right.
Okay, shkoyach. And shkoyach to those who are being osik b'tzorchei tzibur to get the slichos in over here.